Welcome in, McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Riding solo again today. Damien will be behind the glass on production. McElroy will be back with us in the next few days. A lot to get to as it pertains to college football this morning. Yankees go down last night. They are out of the playoffs. Red Sox move on to take on the Rays. Major League Baseball playoffs continue tonight. But I want to get into a lot of football today. We got Bill Connolly coming up. Bill does the S&P rankings for ESPN. We had the conversation yesterday of who's next, who's that next team, who belongs in the conversation with Alabama and Georgia. And the reason I want to bring Bill on was to just bring more of a statistical discussion along with that. As he put those rankings together, he dives into everything and has the idea from a statistical standpoint of maybe who is next, who should be next, who has the best chance to be able to advance and potentially be in the college football playoffs. So we'll talk to Bill about that. He's coming up at 7:30 today. Tom Hart of ESPN, the SEC Network, going to be with us at 8 o'clock this morning. We'll talk to him. He was with me in College Station. How does he think that the Aggies match up with Alabama this weekend? And then we'll talk to Ben Leard, former Auburn quarterback, my teammate, just about how different that Auburn offense looked last week, what he thinks is sustainable moving forward. And, by the way, it's Georgia week, and that's always the reason you want to talk to Ben Leard, just to hear his comments on what that means to him and what he thinks is going to take place. But some news coming down from the NCAA yesterday, and NCAA looking to address the growing number of transfers, and the Division I Council approved a one-year waiver Tuesday that will allow college football teams to be able to sign up to 7 players who can replace players that leave via the transfer portal. Now, current NCAA rules state that a team can sign no more than 25 in a single class, and that includes incoming high school prospects as well as transfers. Because we've talked about this issue before where certain coaches are holding scholarships, not giving them to high school kids in hopes that they can go get a transfer that's able to come in and play now. And we've talked to different coaches that have different philosophies on this, different coaches that say they want to handle it different ways. But this will at least give a reprieve to some teams that have lost a lot of guys to the portal, that have lost a lot of different guys to their roster, and now they can be able to potentially make them up. I mean, when I was doing three-man front, we had Jake Spavital on, and he told us straight up that he didn't sign any high school players 2 years ago. He's going all portal because he needed guys to come in and play right now, and said that some of that was just happenstance via COVID, but wasn't going to continue being that way, but he would still hold some every year. And that's affecting high school kids. So now the waiver will allow teams to sign 25 players plus as many as 7 transfers. Those are not extra high school players. So the transfers, the extra 7, will be to replace those who transfer out. So now I would anticipate more schools are probably going to go with the full allotment of 25 high school players, which is great news. It's really good news. And I don't think most schools are going to anticipate they're going to get more than 7 transfers, unless you're Florida State last year. If you're a new coach coming in and you've had a lot of guys leave, maybe you go over that number, but there are not a lot of teams that are going to be taking more than 7 transfers every year. So I think it's a good effort. I know all the coaches I've talked to have wanted this. They've said that college football needs this. And to me, there are a lot of positives that come with it. Now, of course, players still not going to be able to transfer during the season and become eligible at their schools immediately. And we've seen what transfer and the transfer portal have done to college football. I don't know how much this slows it down, but I do think it maybe changes the mindset of coaches saying, all right, we're not just going to go look for guys out of the portal to come in and help our football team. Damien, you think this is a good rule? Is this good?
Yeah, because it gives it some sort of balance there for a little bit. Like you said, it's real difficult to say, you know, it's difficult for a senior coming out of high school to sit there and say, you know, I don't have any offers because a school that, you know, that was interested in me is going straight transfer portal, which is, I mean, it's just kind of like it's just free agency, but now it's like a controlled free agency, if that makes sense.
Everything that happens with the NCAA, there's usually an underbelly. And there's usually a part of it that I look at and say, all right, your unintended consequence is going to be this. Do you see an unintended consequence with this rule? to me, it's fairly blatant. It should be right in front of you.
Mm-mm.
You're going to get coaches run more kids off. Because they know they can go replace kids now. So I think the unintended consequence of this is you will get more coaches that just say, you know what?
Dang. Get out of it.
It's actually something that Coach Saban sort of lightly referenced to us in a little bit of a different way when we sat down and talked to him and just said that, you know, depending on how this thing goes and the way that you shape it and mold it, you have to be careful because if you make it too easy to get guys back, then you're going to have more coaches pushing guys out. Because instead of sticking with the guy or trying to talk to the guy about his behavior, his practice habits, you're going to say, you know what? We'll just go get a guy out of the portal. Let's go get another guy.
Yeah.
You're out. Just get out. We don't want you. And so I do think now, are we going to see the floodgates open and hear about guys getting, you know, forced out of schools and different things like that? No. But I do think it makes coaches a little bit more adept to say, hey, I'm not really sure that you're for us, so let's just go ahead and move on. Let's just go ahead and get you out of here. Because you know, we saw recently, when I say recently, it's 5 years ago, 6 years ago, a lot of schools started sort of, and it was in response to a certain school or two, started to say, no, that four-year scholarship's guaranteed. That's guaranteed 4 years here. Which technically then I don't even think it was. I think it was just a coach saying that.
Yeah.
Because it's an annual renewable scholarship.
Yep.
So it doesn't even work that way. So when you're talking about guaranteed, though, you think about the 9-point ironclad guarantees from Skelton's Heating and Air. 100% money-back guarantee. No surprise guarantee. Comfort guarantee. Property protection guarantee. $500 installation date guarantee. $500 no frustration guarantee. Utility savings guarantee. Peace of mind guarantee. And no lemon guarantee. You're going to get all those with Skelton's Heating and Air. They've been serving Alabama for more than 20 years. And you get that peace of mind with America's most trusted brand, Trane. Skelton's Heating and Air is going to deliver that. They've got the best installers in the business to do it. They background check them. They're drug tested. And Skelton's covers their work with a 10-year warranty, parts and labor. And they offer 60 months with 0% financing. Visit skeltonsair.com today and find out more about that 9-point ironclad guarantee system that they have for everybody that they install a Trane system for. You guys already know about Trane, know what that's all about, and know what that is best in the business. We know the best in college football is right now. But before we get Bill Connelly on at 7:30, I wanted to go a little bit of a different direction, Damian, than what we went yesterday. And you can always tweet into the show, at Mac and Cube. That's brought to us by our friends at Royal Buick GMC. You can be a part of the show on the Bud Light Hotline, 800-239-9569. Not a ton of time to get in before Bill joins us. However, we went the opposite direction yesterday, said, okay, after Georgia, Alabama, who else do you have? Who else could be there, should be there, has the path to get there? And then obviously talked about the AP rankings. What does that really tell us? What's it telling us right now, if anything? What about those two teams? What's the separation, if there is any, between Georgia and Alabama? If I asked you right now, who are you taking? Is it as easy as just saying Alabama? Is that an easy discussion? To just sit back and say, well, Alabama's number one in the AP, so I'm probably taking the Tide. Who do you think has a better resume? Which team do you believe statistically has been more impressive? Which team offers more difficult matchups across the board? And how do those two teams match up against one another right now? Alabama number one in the AP poll, 53 votes, Georgia got 9. Alabama number one in the coaches poll, 63 votes, Georgia got 2. Now, your football power index, which I'm not going to get into all of exactly what that is, Georgia is actually your number one football team right now.
What?
With a number of 28.2. I don't know if that's okay. I'd have to get the Rubik's Cubic scientists in to help us figure out exactly how that works. I don't know if that is a calculation. If that's just some soft addition, but Alabama comes in second with 27. There's .0 is their number.
Mm. They're right there. I mean, they're right there at the, you know.
Now, to give you, I guess, a little bit of credence to the FPI and what they're doing and how we think, there is some pretty big separation between those two and three, which the FPI would actually have is Ohio State at 20.9 would be the number that they've been assigned to.
Okay.
Or designated.
Yeah, you need
or earned.
We need Rubik's Cubic in there.
So
the paleontologist from
the Rubik's
Cubic decipher that one.
I guess the point there being, even this equation believes that there's pretty big separation between those two. On the surface, who do you think has a better resume?
On the surface, I would go Georgia. I would go Georgia. I think defensively, there's not many flaws in Georgia's defense.
But just the teams they've played, just the teams that they've defeated, you still think Georgia has a better resume?
Yes.
I think a lot of people would believe that it's Alabama because of what Ole Miss was, because of what Florida was when they played them, because of what Miami was when they played them. And obviously that changes. That becomes different. Teams are very different beginning of the season, end of the season. And what the bad part about that is it doesn't work the other way around. Usually when teams knock off a team that we didn't think highly of early and then they end up having a good year, nobody retracts and says,
right.
You know, they got that team then. And look what they did. They win 1-9 games. Nobody ever says that. But you got Clemson, UAB, South Carolina all at 3-2. Vanderbilt at 2-3. Arkansas at 4-1. Miami's at 2-3. Mercer's at 3-1. It's actually really helping the strength of schedule right now.
Look at there.
Florida's at 3-2. Southern Miss at 1-4. Ole Miss at 3-1. Overall opponent records. Georgia's are 15-10. Alabama's are 12-11. And I think most of us would lean that way just because Clemson's there.
Yeah.
And then Arkansas was an undefeated team that was ranked in the top 10. And so we would probably look at it and say, well, I think probably Georgia has a more difficult schedule. Even though we don't view South Carolina as a really good team, above 500. Vanderbilt, hey, they got two more wins than I thought they would have right now.
Look at there.
So, and then obviously UAB we know is a good football team. But from an Alabama perspective, Miami has sort of fallen back to where we thought. That Kentucky game did not help Florida on the resume this weekend. Southern Miss just not having a good year. And Ole Miss is having a good year. So interesting to sort of dive into and look at the numbers of what's the separation and what's the difference. If I asked you right now, if you're ranking it, if I said, Damien, you have to take over the AP poll this week, who's one, who's two for you?
Right now, I would lean Alabama. I would lean Alabama number one, Georgia number two. But I the only thing for me is, I mean, as an offensive player, I think offensively, and in the battle of Alabama's offense and Georgia's defense, I would lean Alabama's offense because of the playmakers that they have. And I think Bryce Young is that guy. And if you flip it around, I haven't seen Georgia's offense at its full capacity. Not holding that against them because they're still putting up points. It's just I haven't seen Georgia complete yet.
It's a weird conversation right now because of what you just brought up. And the reason that I would probably have Alabama 1 and Georgia 2 would simply be quarterback.
Yeah.
Simply quarterback. Like another interesting part of this discussion is, what is Georgia's ceiling with Stetson Bennett?
That's a good point.
We all believe that Georgia's the number 2 team in the nation at worst.
Right.
Some people are going to call in, tweet in, say, no, Georgia's a better football team. Georgia should be number 1. Which, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be extremely mad about that. That's fine. That defense, the defense is pretty ridiculous, by the way.
And then,
they're allowing 4.6 points per game.
It's two safeties.
I mean,
like that's,
it's insane.
That's ridiculous.
4.6 points per game. They're allowing 70.6 rushing yards per game. So the Georgia defense is real. Now, Clemson's offense is struggling. UAB's offense has not been what we thought they were going to be this year. South Carolina doesn't have much of a passing attack. We know Vanderbilt doesn't have an offense. And even Arkansas is a little bit limited. So I would sit back and maybe just say that defense hasn't seen a truly legitimate test yet.
Right.
Now, again, as I say in my takeaways on Sunday, they've handled their business. The teams that have been put in front of them, they have dominated and they have absolutely handled their business. So I'm not really taking that away. I just wonder what would happen if we got to the point that they're going to have to see an elite offense. And how many times is that going to happen this year? How many times is Georgia going to see an offense that's truly scary? Because I actually think the Kentucky matchup with Georgia is not very good for Kentucky. Because part of what Kentucky does is impose their will on you. Mm-hmm. You're not imposing your will on the Georgia defense.
Not
if anything, that's going to happen in reverse. And you've got to find a way to weather that storm. Like, you have to find a way to de-impose the will that's being imposed on you when you play Georgia's defense. And I don't really know how you do that. So it's not going to come this weekend. I think Bobo will have a good plan. I think he'll find a few things that help them create some space and get some playmakers the football. And they'll get a – you know how the last few years we've seen the Auburn offense – and I'm not going to say there weren't good games with Stidham or Nick Marshall or Cam Newton – under this previous regime, we've seen some real letdowns at times against Georgia defense. Like, real letdowns.
Yes.
Against the Georgia defense.
Yes.
I don't think you'll see that this weekend. Now, I don't think they're putting up 400 yards.
No.
But it's not going to be this, holy hell, they can't get 2 yards. Which is kind of where I was in a couple of these Auburn-Georgia games the last few years. You get a couple series in and you're just thinking, are they going to get a first down? I don't think you're going to get that this week. I really don't.
Right.
I think Bobo and Harsin will have a bit of a plan that they put together that's going to be able to help them find some success because of the way that they design certain things. But, I mean, Florida could be a bit of a test. I mean, it's going to be on Dan. If he handles it the way he handles it against Kentucky, then... Missouri, probably not. I mean, offensively, they could get a little bit going, but I'm not even going to pretend like that's real. No. Could we say right now...
Right now.
Would it be fair to say possibly that the biggest test remaining in the regular season for the Georgia defense, by the time we get there, might be the Tennessee Volunteers?
Yes, because they won't. My thing on Tennessee is because of what Josh Heupel brings offensively, his offense is built on, hey, we're going to take the shots when we got them. They're coming regardless. So it's just... They swing for the fences.
And by the way, Georgia's going to give them to you.
Yeah, because
they're going to play man.
Absolutely. So you're going to get them. So for explosion purposes, yes, Tennessee may be the best offense they're going to face.
I would still go Florida ahead of Tennessee just because, you know, a lot of folks are disappointed that Anthony Richardson didn't get more time against Kentucky. I do think that's going to increase, and he's going to help make them a little bit more dynamic. And that could be one where they're really kind of saving him to potentially be able to bust out in that game. So we'll see. But even if Florida is one, I still may put Tennessee next just because, again, I think the Kentucky matchup is a very bad matchup for Kentucky in that game.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not one that what they do well favors you heavily against what Georgia also does well.
Right.
And so I don't think Kentucky's. I mean, I picked them to finish second in the East, and I think they're going to, especially if they win this weekend. I think they got it locked. But I don't like that matchup for them. So you look down, and we wonder, all right, is this defense dominant? Yes. How dominant? I don't know if we know until it gets tested. And it's not going to be tested a ton this regular season. It just won't be. And then back to the question of what's their ceiling with Stetson Bennett, which I think is more of an intriguing question. Because I think it's really easy. It's really easy to sit here right now and say, probably win the East. Which, yeah, I mean, JT Daniels probably not playing this weekend. I don't hear anybody sitting there saying, oh, the door's open for Auburn.
Right.
Because Stetson Bennett's in.
It's not.
I haven't heard a lot of people say, well, if Stetson Bennett's playing when Kentucky comes to town, then Kentucky's got him.
Nobody's worried.
It's just not. Because you got a guy that's at least a veteran. He's kind of crafty. He understands things. He made nice throws early against Arkansas. I don't think they're ever going to just turn him loose and say, all right, man, have 35, 40 throws tonight. You ready? That's not coming. It's not going to be.
Nobody's worried about that one.
But he can break you down with his legs a little bit. He is accurate in the intermediate stuff. And then I also look at some of these defensive lines. Like, the one big problem I think Auburn has is they don't have enough length up front to take away some of the passing windows, which I think if I play Stetson Bennett, I want to keep him in the pocket. I want to keep him in the pocket, and I want to have my longest pass rushers in the game. It's an area that Alabama had big advantage last year because they had guys with big wingspans that could rush the passer, and even if they didn't get home, they could still take away passing lanes.
Boom.
He couldn't get it over the line of scrimmage. Kentucky might have a little bit of that. Florida's got some of that if they want it, and nobody else on the schedule does. There's no need in talking about Charleston Southern and Georgia Tech. We're not even going to worry about that.
That's
not a real thing. So, it's intriguing to think about where, how different might we look at Georgia if JT Daniels had been in the entire time just playing like B-plus football. I mean, if he was throwing for 280, 310 a game, he had 12 touchdowns, one interception or two interceptions, and one was a tip ball. How different would we look at this team?
A lot.
Because Stetson Bennett's just not dynamic, and he's not going to create explosive plays, and Bryce Young is. And Bryce Young is an escape artist, and Bryce Young's a guy when things break down, he more times than not, like 80 out of 95 times, he's making a play.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so therefore you look at it and you say, that guy's going to get it done. I have more confidence in that kid when things don't go well, being able to make something happen, than I do this other guy. But.
Uh-oh.
But.
Here we go.
If you have confidence that Stetson Bennett can run the table in the regular season and get them to Atlanta, and we've had all these other conversations about there's not really anybody else ready. Even if Iowa is ready, and let's just say Iowa runs the table in the Big Ten, and they're the Big Ten champion. Now, there may be some other conversations about some other one-loss Big Ten teams that we could allow to be a part of that. I don't think there's going to be – I don't see Wake Forest running the table, so I don't think that there's an ACC team that's going to be in that conversation.
Nope.
I don't think there's a Pac-12 team going to be in that conversation. Oklahoma would probably prevent this, maybe, possibly. But I think it's a little bit unfair to just say – Stetson Bennett's ceiling is to win the East. Because if they win the East, they're going to Atlanta.
That's
and they
fact.
Go to Atlanta, they're playing Alabama.
Yep.
And if they're competitive with Alabama and they've won all those other games, there's a good chance they're getting in.
There.
So just think about that. The ceiling for Stetson Bennett may be the college football playoff. Not winning it,
but
just getting to
there.
It, which is pretty damn good if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen Stetson Bennett in person. I mean, I've had two of his games as a starting quarterback. And trust me, it's not imposing by any stretch of the imagination. It just isn't. I had the Kentucky game last year where they literally would not let him put the ball in the air, especially in the first half. I mean, it was that was a literal time warp of a football game because I think there were three passes thrown in the air in the first half combined. In that game, Georgia won 14-3.
Yeah. Barn burner.
Hey, listen, they won the game.
That's all that matters.
Stetson Bennett ended up being 9 of 13 for 131 and two picks in that game.
Look at
no
it.
Touchdowns.
Yeah.
No touchdowns.
Yeah.
Did not have a touchdown.
Not efficient.
But Joey Gatewood was 15 of 25 for 91 yards.
Hold on. Who?
Yeah.
You said, say that. Who was?
No, he got the start in that game.
Oh, interesting. I thought he was supposed to start on the plane.
15 of 25 for 91 yards. How do you complete 15 passes for 91 yards? That's an average of 3.6 per completion. Yikes. No. All right, so where are we? Georgia, Alabama. Alabama, Georgia. If they met, who's next? Who's the other team that's best suited to be able to make this jump, make this move right now on the across the landscape of college football? Bill Connelly handles all of these S&P rankings for ESPN. He's got an article up now about who the next characters are that could potentially be a part of this playoff, and he will discuss all of that with us next right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Welcome back in, McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Conversation concerning Alabama and Georgia. What they are, how far they are ahead of everybody else, and then the separation between those two, and who actually should be ranked ahead of the other. Bill Connelly has an article up now, ESPN Plus, which college football teams and players have earned our trust through 5 weeks. So, Bill, as you join us on the Bud Light Hotline, I want to just take a little bit of a spin on that title and the article that you have up now of those two teams that I just mentioned. Going on to win the SEC, win the college football playoff, be national champion. Just so far with what you've seen, Georgia, Alabama, who's earned more trust from you?
Well, I think historically, like, it's hard because Alabama always earns trust and always or usually ends up living to all up to all expectations. So it's easy to say Alabama just generally, but this year specifically and only this year, I think Georgia's pretty clearly been the best team in the country. We're still trying to catch up to how good Georgia is. The sports books are still trying to catch up to how good Georgia is. They're overachieving the spread by like 16 points per game or something like that. So it's the Dogs have been as good as you could possibly ask for them to be. They just have to, you know, show up against Alabama, show up against Florida's offense if it's as good as it could, or if it's playing as well as it could anyway. Those were kind of the tricks last year that they couldn't quite figure out. So we'll see soon enough, but Georgia this year.
All right, well, so you look at this in a little bit of a different way that a lot of us do. I mean, obviously you watch as a fan too, so you have your opinions, but you're going to look at a lot of analytics and a lot of statistics as far as how you rank teams and ultimately how you judge teams. How is the Stetson Bennett situation clouding your view and maybe statistical view of what Georgia is or can be this year?
Yeah, it's really tricky because we saw last year, like against lesser teams, especially lesser teams that can't really move the ball on the Georgia defense, Stetson Bennett is going to work just fine for you. You know, he's going to make mostly smart decisions. He's a good leader. He's going to complete high percentage passes. That's basically what he's done. Throwing a couple deep balls at the beginning of the UAB game, and his numbers are phenomenal. It's just, you know, with what we saw last year when you play a team that Georgia that can actually score on Georgia, even if it only happens a couple of times a year, you know, if you get in a track meet situation, we don't know that he's going to be any better at keeping up in those situations. That's what made the difference last year with JT Daniels, is suddenly they could use the whole field. If they got involved in one of those track meets, they could keep up and they could get more aggressive when they needed to. And that's just something we're not going to know the answer to until we get into a situation where a team's at least scoring on Georgia, but especially if they can score 20, 25, 30 points, we don't know if Bennett's any more capable of keeping up than he was last year.
It's really weird, Bill, because we were kind of having this conversation before you joined us, and I said, what's the ceiling for Georgia with Stetson Bennett? And I think most people immediately would just say, well, they can win the East. But then it's like, Okay, well, if they win the East and they run the table in the regular season, they play Alabama, they're competitive, aren't they probably in? So then the ceiling for Stetson Bennett would be the college football playoff.
Right. I don't see, especially with what we're seeing from the defense. They've been number one in my defensive SP Plus rankings for, I think, two straight years now, and this defense just kind of blows those two out of the water. Again, so far, you know, we'll see. There are better offenses on the schedule, but I guess technically just about anybody could, if you've never given up more than 13 points, just a lot of quarterbacks could lead you really far. It's just, again, the Florida game is going to be interesting. Florida obviously disappointed against Kentucky last week, offensively especially. So we'll see exactly what they have to offer in a couple more weeks. But that game's going to be interesting. And it's just all about Alabama. And it stinks when we already have a small sample sport, but it's so hard to get the read we need to on Georgia, because we know only a team like Alabama is likely to put a bunch of points on the board against them.
Bill Connolly of ESPN joining us now on the Bud Light Hotline. His article up on ESPN Plus now: which college football teams and players have earned our trust through 5 weeks? Again, Bill, a little bit of a different spin on the actual content in your article, but I feel like you may be well-versed to sort of answer this question, or at least debate it with me, because I could not come up with a great answer for my thought yesterday after Alabama and Georgia. To me, it might not even be about the team, but what I asked on the show yesterday was, who's the player, who's the position group, or who's the side of the ball that we even view as the biggest threat or most scary for Alabama and Georgia if they did see them in a postseason game? And it just feels so different to me than it has other years, without a Cam Newton, without a Johnny Manziel, without a Lamar Jackson, an Adrian Peterson. There doesn't seem to be the one guy that you say, man, if we ran into that dude, we could not make any mistakes. Or even really a side of the ball. I think Ole Miss might have been that team before this weekend where we said, don't want to play that offense. But, not even a position group of maybe receivers or a D-line that you say, whoo, would not want to see them in the postseason because that could get tricky. Is there one, two, three that stick out for you just from that perspective? Not even an entire team that those two would see that might be a little bit scary for you?
Well, I think, the Ohio State skill core in general is absolutely dynamite and super deep too. Three receivers that can take, you know, that can score on a 70-yard pass or, you know, a short pass and take it 70 yards. At least two running backs who can do major damage. I don't know this year specifically if Ohio State can compete with Alabama and Georgia in the trenches. That's been a kind of an interesting development. Ohio State just hasn't quite been as good up front. And maybe with what we've seen the last 2 weeks, maybe they're starting to figure things out in terms of defensive structure, which will help. But that skill core that Ohio State has, I think, can hang with anybody if you can overcome what might be a disadvantage on the line. And that's hard to do. We know that's very hard to do, and that's really where Alabama and Georgia are standing out so dramatically, especially against the upstarts like Arkansas and Ole Miss. So I don't know if that's enough, but I do trust those athletes on the perimeter to do some serious damage if they only have a little bit of space.
So I feel like if I asked you who's next for you, as you put your rankings together, it sounds like everything that you're saying is Ohio State's most likely going to come in next after Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, obviously their margin for error here is slim since they already got their loss out of the way early. And, they'll need a full-on 2014 charge here. But I think what we've seen the last 2 weeks was extremely Ohio State-like. And obviously we're only going to get so much of a read off of you based on Akron and Rutgers. But they treated those teams like Akron and Rutgers. They didn't look all that hot against Tulsa the week before until really late in that game. But whatever rearranging they're doing on defense, I think is, maybe it's starting to pay off. Maybe they're just starting to get guys in the right place, get their secondary healthy and all that. So maybe, I think that's probably from a trust factor. I think I'm getting there with Ohio State. I just don't know if they can. The Big Ten East is extremely ridiculously hard this year, and I'm not sure they can skate through all that without another loss. But if they do, I do think they're probably most well equipped to hang with Georgia or Alabama in a playoff.
Bill Connolly of ESPN joining us now on the Bud Light Hotline. He has his S&P rankings out that you can check out at ESPN.com. Article up now at ESPN Plus on players, teams that have earned our trust through 5 weeks. A good read there. You kind of brought up some teams that are difficult to diagnose. Cincinnati is going to be one for a lot of people, maybe because they don't see them, maybe because of the level of competition. Where do they fall in your statistical rankings as it stands today?
Well, special teams, they could certainly stand to improve. If they had better special teams, they would have put Notre Dame away a little earlier last week. But I mean, what we saw last year against Georgia, let's start there. Like, I think the most impressive thing about Cincinnati's performance against Georgia was obviously Georgia ended up, especially in the second half when what's his name, Hudson, the tackle, was ejected. Obviously Georgia, their defensive line had an advantage, but just top to bottom, skill core and lines and everything else, Cincinnati competed and broke even in a lot of cases with Georgia from a physical standpoint. And I think, obviously, you only want to take so much of an impression from 1 year and apply it to another, but that stuck with me, just the way that they were able to hang in a way that a lot of SEC teams can't. And I think that's really important to remember, because you combine that with the fact that, I mean, Notre Dame doesn't lose at home. They, obviously they don't play all that many top 10 teams at home, but Cincinnati went to South Bend and dominated a team that doesn't really lose to teams that aren't really good. And they really just kept Notre Dame at bay that whole game. I think that was really impressive. Obviously now we're in a situation where, the AAC isn't, by its own standard, it isn't amazing this year. They've got SMU, they've got UCF, which, UCF has its own issues at the moment. So they're not going to have many more chances to make an impression. And usually what that means is we forget all about you in those cases. But over the last 2 years, Cincinnati has just been so consistently good, is physically good, has a good quarterback. I think they're one of the more trustworthy teams in the country, to use the trust meme there. I think we've seen what we need to see from them, that they can skate through these next. They got a lot of work to do, obviously, but they have proven themselves dramatically.
So let me ask you this question. You brought it up. I said it yesterday with SMU sneaking into the top 25. That's a team that Cincinnati, in my opinion, desperately needs to run the table until they play them.
Yeah.
Just to get eyeballs, just to make noise, just to get people's attention again, because they might not get it for a couple of weeks. What kind of a football team, according to your numbers, is SMU right now?
SP Plus still doesn't trust the defense. Let's put it that way. They give up a lot of big plays. The passing, the run defense is actually really good, but the pass defense, not so much. They're very aggressive. The aggression doesn't always pay off, and they could get gashed pretty badly. But a team like that is also very volatile in that, since they're aggressive, since they're really consistently good on offense, can kind of produce a wide range of results, and it might cause Cincinnati to really have to, you know, score 40 plus, and we'll see. Usually Cincinnati's really good at kind of just defining the game and controlling the scope of the game. So, that could, you know, get them into a game they're uncomfortable playing. So that's, I mean, Cincinnati's better, you know, down for down, game to game. Cincinnati's quite a bit better than SMU, but they're just, SMU's volatile enough to make that a pretty scary situation.
Okay, give me the team. Bill Connelly of ESPN with us on the Bud Light Hotline. You said Ohio State would be next after Alabama and Georgia. But who's a team that's maybe lurking that even surprised you, that your numbers have confidence in, that could maybe make a bit of a splash by the regular season ends?
I mean, again, like, the Big Ten East is ridiculous enough right now. I could make a case for saying Penn State, but I think a lot of people understand Penn State's pretty good. My numbers trust Michigan a lot more than I think, you know. We've been down this road before with Michigan. Look really good in September, look really good in October, set the stakes for the season, get yourself in position to make the playoff, and then get blown out by Ohio State or whatever, lose via fluky bounce to Michigan State, whatever the situation is. So obviously they have to prove that this is different, but on paper so far, Michigan has been just about one of the most consistently strong teams in the country. The Rutgers game, you know, they couldn't quite put that game away. But Wisconsin still has a very good defense, and they moved the ball in Wisconsin. They've dominated everybody else. I think this is a, on paper, a very trustworthy team. It's just, again, when you know the history, it gets a little harder to trust that situation.
Bill, great stuff, man. Really do appreciate the time. Just such an interesting conversation with you to hear from a little bit of a different perspective of sort of where these other teams are and who might be able to sneak in and sort of be dangerous with what has already been a wild, wild regular season. Thanks for Absolutely. The time today. Yeah, thanks for the time, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Take care.
That's Bill Connelly of ESPN, at ESPN underscore Bill C. You follow him on Twitter, find his work up at ESPN.com. ESPN Plus right now has that article of what coaches, players, teams have earned our trust the most through 5 weeks of this regular season. Share yours if you have one, a player, a coach, a position group, because I'd like to know it. And I want to go a little bit further into some of the numbers surrounding Alabama and Georgia. I mean, some of these numbers are like fantasy land when you start talking about just what they've been able to do, both these teams they've been able to do so far this season. But best new place to play fantasy sports, it's obviously Underdog Fantasy. You guys know that. Daily and season-long fantasy sports. You got the NFL Pick'em game, but you can take any 2 to 5 player props, parlay those together to win up to 20 times your entry in one night. Go over under. If you want to add that, pick whether a player is going to go over or under a given stat line in their individual game, and then the rivals match up. Or you take certain players with a given stat line, pit them against one another, handicap it, and then obviously find out who is the best. Underdog Fantasy, best new place to play fantasy sports. Find them at underdogfantasy.com or download the app today. It's easy. That app is easy to navigate. I fire it up, look right through, simple to find exactly what I want. And best news is, you fire that app in your app store today, use promo code RADIO, you're going to get $25 cash for free with your first deposit. So you get a couple extra plays right there on Underdog Fantasy if you do that today. And they guarantee you're going to like it, and they'll give you your money back up to $100 if you don't. Download the app today to start playing, and don't forget to use promo code RADIO at sign-in. Underdog Fantasy, the best new place to play fantasy sports. Terms and conditions apply. What is the statistical separation in a couple of major categories for Alabama, Georgia? We'll tell you next on McElroy and Kubik in the morning. I know this was sort of requested, but do you even know about this song?
Of course.
What do you know about
UGK,
it?
Jay-Z. Pimp C, Bun, B-U-M-B, come on now. Big pimping out of NYC.
You even know who UGK is?
Of course, yeah. Underground Kings, cut straight out of Port Arthur, Texas. Come on now, don't test my gangster.
What's their best song?
Well, International Players Anthem, that's the one I grew up with, but that was like, you know, years down the road with Outkast. But let's see. It's about the only song I know, really. But I mean,
you knew that.
So yeah, yeah, yeah.
Front, back, side to side, probably be one.
Yeah.
Get that one. That album, Super Tight, was really good.
Look at you.
Pocket Full of Stones. It's good. Yeah.
Look at you. Straight out of Fort Worth, Texas.
But that the first video that cost over $1 million to make.
Really?
Big Pimpin', correct. Hype Williams directed that.
Oh, yeah. Look at you. I had dropping the educational boy.
That was a big deal back then.
Yeah, like, yeah, now everything's cost about, you know,
well, I was billions of dollars. I don't even know how much people are putting in actual videos anymore.
But yeah, that is true.
Apparently they do make them and put them on YouTube. I found that out the other day. Didn't know that was a real thing, but it is.
Straight to YouTube.
Yeah, why not? Because if you can go get 10 million views,
right,
you can get paid.
Who needs MTV anymore?
Don't need it.
No, don't.
Georgia might not need JT Daniels. I mean, that's been a part of our conversation today. 800-239-9569. You want to get in our conversation, Georgia v. Bama. Just who's better? Who has the best chance to go win a national title? What's your confidence level in each team? How much does the quarterback situation in Athens change your opinion on that? I think it's all an interesting discussion. And Bill basically admitted there's a pretty big gap, but Ohio State next in line for him statistically? It's hard for me to get there. I understand where he's going from the perspective of that skill is really good. And so it would only take a quarterback to get hot for a game or two, and then all of a sudden things can change. But the inability to fit the run and the troubles tackling and the inability to get to the quarterback would probably be concerning for me. I don't think that offensive line's great. But also, when are we going to learn? I mean, it's going to take until October the 30th and they play Penn State. And then they get Michigan State, Michigan to close the season. So that'll obviously teach us a little bit more. But, I mean, that schedule looks like it's lightened a little bit. Maryland was having a nice year, but now Talia's handed to the other team a little bit too much. Indiana's not who we thought they were. Nebraska's not great. Purdue's not great. So three big games on the schedule for Ohio State to work their way back into that conversation of potentially being the team that's next. And then you also consider that if Iowa keeps doing what they're doing and they're able to get Iowa in the Big Ten championship game, then, of course, that would propel them easily to be involved in the college football playoff. You guys have heard me since the beginning of the season saying it. I'm not buying them. I'm not buying Ohio State. And there's nothing that they've done so far this season that's going to make me buy them now. Why would I buy Ohio State now? Because they smashed Rutgers or Akron or couldn't put their foot on the throats of Tulane? I mean, this is just not there for me. I'm not buying Ohio State. But if you're buying a home, the Gusty Gulas Group, brokered by eXp Realty, is the only group that you should trust here in Birmingham. Only agent I know I would trust if I need to sell a home in the Birmingham area, that's the Gusty Gulas Group. Just Google Gusty Gulas Group or look up GustyGulas.com, and you're going to find out why. If you want, you can go ahead and get started packing. Like when Kevin was ready to sell his rental property in downtown Birmingham, a friend referred him to the Gusty Gulas Group. With a well-researched pricing strategy and aggressive coming-soon marketing, Kevin's home sold in 3 days, $12,000 over the original asking price. To top it off, the team was able to take care of everything virtually since Kevin lived out of state. Now Kevin's moving on with extra money in the bank. The Gusty Gulas Group can do this for you. Why? They have immediate access to the best homes in the area as soon as they hit the market. And most agents start marketing after you list with them. Gusty's not going to do that. He's been marketing, and he's got buyers lined up to be able to purchase your home and agents to be able to help you find the perfect home for you and your family. So Google GustyGulas.com today or Gusty Gulas Group, and you'll find out exactly what Gusty Gulas can do for you. Dave and Hoover, you got 30 seconds on Georgia. Go.
You got to contain Stetson Bennett. The ends have got to keep him in the pocket in the middle. You keep him in the pocket in the middle, that's where his interceptions come from. He throws them high. He can't see. That's my game plan.
Yep. I said it earlier. I'm trying to keep Stetson Bennett in the pocket and made him beat us with his arm. And then, but to do that too, Dave, you got to slow that running game down. And I don't know if there's a lot of defensive lines across college football that can legitimately match up to that and what Georgia has, especially now that they've asked.
I put seven in the box, have the ends contained, stuff to run, and if he can see over that front line and throw downfield, let him beat you. That's the only chance you got.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Dave. Appreciate that. Tom Hart of ESPN, the SEC Network, will join us next. We'll get his opinion on the A&M-Alabama matchup as he just returned from College Station next on McElroy and Kublik in the morning.